As I like to say, what's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome, and this show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you. In fact, every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Nice to have you here. All right, let's talk about the program. Telephone number is wide open. I do have an interview coming up next segment. In fact, early next segment. In the meantime, here is your number. Use it. 1-800-636-8686. You've got your topics, right? Game one of the World Series. Lakers, Clippers last night. The Jets are still bent and more. Dial now. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at HaveAtake.com. The interview next segment is with Indianapolis Colts cornerback Pierre Desir. That's coming up in about 15 minutes. Next hour, a senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, Therese Paylor. In hour number three, an offensive tackle with the Baltimore Ravens, Ronnie Stanley. So it's setting up nicely. It's Podcast Wednesday. Former NBAer Steven Jackson is my guest on the podcast, and we'll lay that out a little bit later on. 1-800-636-8686. We'll start with game one. Game one of the World Series could not have started any better for the Astros. They held Washington scoreless in the top of the first, and then they immediately went right to work on Max Scherzer in the bottom of that inning. Their game plan against Scherzer was to make him throw as many pitches as possible. As many pitches as possible, and that's exactly what happened in the first. George Springer walks, Jose Altuve singles, but Scherzer digs deep. He strikes out the next two guys, and then Yuri Gurriel fell behind 0-2. At that point, it looked like Scherzer was going to work out. It looked like he would get out of the inning. And the Astros would have to kind of comfort themselves with the fact that while they didn't score, they did make him work. They started to work that pitch count. But after a ball, Yuri did this.
Here's the 1-2. And Yuli lines this one deep to left center. Going back is Soto. Still going back. Looking up. That is off the wall. Springer scores. Altuve scores. Gurriel in the second. A two-run double. 2-0 Astros.
Two-run score. That's Astros radio. Couple of runs score. And when you've got Gerrit Cole on the mound, two runs might very well be enough. I mean, it gets really late, really early against Cole, and after the damage that Houston did to Scherzer in the first, you couldn't really blame Astros fans if they thought they had already won game one, like they were going to cruise to a game one win. No disrespect to the Nats, except Cole had not lost in 5 months. He was not that sharp in his last outing, so you knew he'd be dialed for game one. So yes, two runs for that guy did feel like it would be enough. Then again, we are talking about the Nats. These are not the Nats of old. Not the Nats where it wasn't a question of if they'd fold, but a matter of when they'd fold. Not this crew. They don't turtle. They don't get intimidated. Not on the road. Not against the best pitcher in baseball. And not in game one of the World Series. As I always say, they're not here to take part. They're here to take over. And old head Ryan Zimmerman reminded the entire world of that fact when he stepped to the plate in the second with two outs.
Here's the wind of the pitch. Swing and a drive hit well. Deep center field. Way back goes Springer to the warning track. Looking up and it is gone. Goodbye. Bang. Zoom goes the Z-Man.
Pow. Biff. Kaboom.
Bang!
Kerplunk!
Zoom goes the Z-Man!
Nats radio, 2-1 Astros. The fact that it was that guy doing that in that situation with two outs was absolutely huge. So on brand. Because what that did was it sucked so much of the early momentum from the Astros and so much of that energy out of that house. Coming right back in the next half inning to get on the board was massive. And doing it the way they did it was even bigger. It proved they don't give in, ever. It proved the Cole is mortal. And if Zimmerman's shot in the second was massive, I'm not sure exactly how you describe what Juan Soto did leading off the fourth.
The 1-0. Swinging a fly ball, well hit to left field. Way back goes this one. It's got a chance. It's going, going, and long gone up onto the railroad tracks. Welcome to the World Series, Juan Soto. Nationals tie the game at 2 as Juan Soto goes opposite field for a tape measure home run.
Pow! Biff! Kerplunk!
Bang!
Boom! Tie game. And that one was absolutely smoked. An absolute bomb the opposite way onto the train track that's 50 feet above the field. When that ball eventually was recovered, it was given to Soto, who is donating it to Cooperstown. So Cole dominates Juan Soto in the first at-bat, sits him down with a 99.1 mile-per-hour heater. But that was not going to happen again, because every single at-bat for Soto is a brawl, and he was not about to get iced two times in a row. So the Astros had a chance to get to Scherzer and chase him early. He was on the ropes. He was taking a lot of punishment, seemingly unable to defend himself, and the fight could have ended early. But it didn't, because this dude battled his ass off. Everything was a struggle for Scherzer last night, including the fact that he made 112 pitches to get through five innings. So clearly that was not your typical dominant Scherzer performance. But that said, I couldn't be any more impressed with how this guy got it done than I am right now. Not dominant, but as impressive a performance as you're ever going to see from an ace in the postseason. He didn't have his best stuff, yet he was able to grind out and grunt out five tough innings and keep his team in it and give them a chance to win. And he kept Washington in it long enough for the offense to take a lead 3-2 in the fifth. And then, with two runners on, you know who came up again.
3-2 to Soto. Swung on, hit in the inner left field. Brantley going back against the Crawford boxes off the wall. Bounces by him back toward the infield. Robles has scored. Rounding third is Rendon. He comes in to score. On a booming double off the left field wall by Juan Soto.
Pow! After the game, Cole said that Soto home run was a, quote, tip-your-cap situation. But the slider he threw there was a bad pitch. I mean, last night, almost any pitch thrown to Soto was going to be a bad pitch, because this guy was locked in and he was raking, and he kept on doing it. He singled in the eighth. He even ripped a bag. He stole second as well. And now I am required by law to inform you that Juan Soto is only 20. Get used to hearing that. It's the new Jerome Bettis is from Detroit. Luckily, he's going to turn 21 shortly. So how do you explain that guy, that young, showing up that big in game one of the World Series? And it's not like the guy was doing it against some Hammond Egger on the mound either. He was doing it against a Cy Young candidate, a guy who hadn't lost a decision in 5 months, a guy who's arguably the best pitcher in baseball. How the hell does a 20-year-old do that against that guy on that big of a stage? The best explanation came from a Nats executive who told Jeff Passan that Soto is, quote, a dog that plays checkers. And when asked for a further explanation, the exec said, quote, you don't see dogs playing checkers, end quote. Good point. Good point, I guess. What an awesome quote. What an awesome quote. Whatever the hell that means. Then again, I guess you don't see dogs playing checkers. Just as you don't see mammoth 20-year-olds doing signature shuffles in the batter's box, tugging at their own junk aggressively, and dominating arguably the best pitcher in baseball in game one of the World Series. You don't see that very often. So as much as calling Soto a dog that plays checkers doesn't make any sense, it actually makes perfect sense, because nothing that guy does right now makes sense. He's not supposed to be doing this. Nobody is, and neither are the Nats, who you come to find out are just a bunch of checker-playing dogs. I will finish that thought in a minute. Couldn't be more impressed with how they handled themselves last night in Game 1. I need to get out right now because I've got Pierre Desir. Colts Corner coming up when we come back. Hey, fellas, how many of you are guilty of using your wife or your girlfriend's shampoo in the shower? I bet more than a few. Have you considered the importance of using a product designed for your hair? You know, men's hair? After all, your hair is different. Dove Men Plus Care has created a hair care range designed to fortify men's hair and give it the care it needs to stay strong and healthy. Do your family and your hair a big favor. Get your own product. Dove Men Plus Care for stronger, more resilient hair, and available at Walmart.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
day isn't Ask the Pros Day. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. So you want to go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Ask me a question. And in the meantime, you want to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Wild night in L.A. Clippers and Lakers on any other given night or on any other given morning, you know I'm going to start the program with that. I nearly started the program with that this morning, except it was game one of the World Series, and it was a great game one. So that's where I started. I've got more thoughts on game one, and I definitely want to break down both sides of Lakers-Clippers. Clippers-Lakers. We are efforting Pierre Desir. We'll have him momentarily. This email reads, Rome, wore the Astros, being choked out by the Nationals. Signed, Bryce Harper. They are so tough, man. Max Scherzer, to fall behind the way he did last night and just keep grinding and battling, keep his team in it, 112 pitches through five innings, man, I've never been more impressed. I've seen him, well, most of the time, he's got much better stuff, much better command, but I'm not sure I've been any more impressed than what I saw from him last night in what was less than a dominant performance, obviously. The way that guy just kept battling and grinding and got them five innings was so impressive. Jaime, a couple of things here. Number one, best event to ever happen at the wee tiny stadium was your tour stop. Number two, lastly, could that field be any tinier? My fourth grader could hit one out opposite field. Stephen S.A. Yeah, but still, they missed a tying home run by a few feet. So it wasn't quite small enough, was it? Dear Jim, you say the Jets are still bent? We can help with that. Sincerely, Mall Chiropractors. War Bent Pens. Dude, 1999 called. They want their take back and their bent pen and their bones that they roll around on wheels, giving you free spinal exams. And by the way, free is me, unless it involves a spinal exam. Then I don't want to be free. 1-800-636-8686 is the number you want to dial. You can also follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome, and you can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E. HaveAtake.com. Clippers, Lakers, great game last night. I want to get into that. In fact, I want to break that down from both sides. And I want to get into why that's not a rivalry. No matter how badly people want to make it a rivalry, it's just not. As promised, we're joined right now by a cornerback for the Indianapolis Colts. Seven tackles, two passes defensed, and an INT in Sunday's win over Houston. 21 tackles, three passes defensed, and that interception for the season. 18 passes defensed in 2012. That tied for the most in NCAA Division II ball. He was the 127th pick overall in 2014 out of Lindenwood. The Colts are 4-2. They're in first in the AFC South, and they're at home against Denver, 1 p.m. Sunday on CBS. Pierre Desir is my guest. Pierre, it's been a while, but it's good to have you back. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good. Good to have you. So I know you're already thinking about Denver this weekend, but if you could you go back to Sunday for a minute? You're going up against the Texans. You're getting ready to face DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson. What were the keys for you, and what was your mindset going into that game?
For me, my mindset was that they're going to make plays. You know, they have an electric offense. Hopkins is one of the best receivers in the league, so they're going to get their plays. But for us, we just knew we had to limit the big plays as far as the secondary, just stay on top, just pay attention to our keys and play our technique, and we knew we were going to come out with victory if we did all those.
Pierre Desir is my guest. So in the fourth quarter, you guys were up 28-16, but Houston was driving. Then on first down, you came up with a huge interception. What did you see on that play, and how pleased were you to make that play and come down with it?
We were in zone coverage, and my eyes were on the quarterback the whole time. So once I saw the receiver sit down and I saw the back come out to me, I just read the QB's eyes, and I just jumped the play, got the ball. Definitely was a momentum builder, and anytime we can give our offense the ball back is definitely going to help us win. And I was just trying to go out there, do my job, and I just read the QB's eyes.
The fact is, Pierre, that was a huge play and a huge momentum changer. But the thing is, you didn't practice last week due to injury, yet you were still able to get on the field and play every single defensive snap and have that big impact. Your teammates talked about how much that inspired them. How were you able to do that, actually, not to practice at all and then show up that way?
It was the mental preparedness, being prepared, being in meetings, being in walkthroughs, being out there in practice with the guys, even though I wasn't practicing. So making sure I took the mental aspect out of it. And then when I got on the field, just making sure that I put myself in position to make plays. And I wanted to show my teammates, you know, if I'm able to go out there, I'm playing for them, playing for the team. And it was a great team win. And, you know, we're very happy about it, but we have to move on to Denver.
We're talking to Colts cornerback Pierre Desir. You got to move on to Denver, but I want to ask you about the defense. The last two games, you guys have faced Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes and come out with a couple of wins. There are not very many defenses in the league that can do that. What's to say about that defensive unit and how good your team is?
I'll say it all starts up front. Our D-line has been getting to the quarterback, and they've been causing havoc, allowing us to be able to make plays. And we hustle to the ball, so this the combination of that and us just paying attention and playing our defense, not really trying to fall in the trap of what the offense is doing, just doing our jobs and doing our assignments and flying around and having fun. And you see that on the field when guys are making tackles, we're celebrating. So, I mean, it starts up front, but, you know, everybody contributes and everybody helps us to the ball. And that's why we've been successful.
You know, it's not just the defense either. As well as you guys are playing, what about Jacoby Brissett? He had a career-high 326 yards passing, four TDs. How impressed and how proud were you of the way he showed up?
You know, we've been seeing this. And we've been seeing how Jacoby played in practice, training camp. So we knew what he was capable of. And like I said, anytime on the defense you're able to put the ball into an offensive hand like Jacoby and the offense that we have, it puts you at ease knowing that they're going to go out there, they're going to put up points, they're going to drive the field, take time off the clock. So he's been playing lights out, and we all believe in him. We all trust him, and he's been leading us.
Pierre Desir is my guest. You know, you had a great tweet, I thought, after the game. It was a photo of you and your guys in the end zone, and the caption read, "Live for the moments you can't put into words," end quote. Knowing the journey that you've taken to get here, how special are moments like those on Sunday?
Those moments are moments that you won't ever forget, especially with guys that you've been grinding with for years, training camp. It just means that much better to be able to celebrate those moments with your teammates. And you know, like you said, just the journey that I went through, just putting it all in perspective. And I got to enjoy everything, every win, every victory. I'm trying to do it with my teammates. And those are the moments I definitely won't forget.
It's such a great message. You know, in fact, when I talk about that journey, you came on this show back in May of 2014, and we talked about the fact that you didn't get into football until high school, and then you went to a smaller college, and you were drafted, but a lot has happened for you since then. You were drafted by the Browns. You played for them in 14 and 15. Then you went to the Chargers and Seattle. At one point, you were cut three times in 7 weeks. Looking back, what was that experience like for you, and did you think your career might be over at that point?
Yeah, I mean, I grew a lot during those times of being cut multiple times, four times total. And I learned a lot about myself on what I needed to do as a player, as a professional. You know, there's always times you have doubts, especially being cut multiple times. But I surround myself with positive people and great family that encouraged me to continue to push for my dreams. And that's what I did, and just continue to fight. Never wanted to really give up the dream, but there's adversities that hit, and you know, you just got to be focused and have a good positive outlook, and just, you know, take whatever opportunity you can when you get the opportunity to.
So Pierre, like when that was happening and you were getting cut and you kept hearing it's a numbers game, it's a numbers game, it's just a numbers game, what did you think when you heard that, and what kind of a mentality and approach did you develop coming out of that?
After being released from Seattle, I took upon myself to look and see what was I doing wrong. Because most of the times you blame the teams, you blame the coaches or the players don't like you or something like that. And so I just had to change my mindset on what I need to do as a professional, study better, whether it's, and then with my nutrition, just trying to be overall pro and putting that mindset that it's not going to happen again. And I stayed positive through the ups and downs when I was able to come to the Colts in 2017. just staying positive, and I think that's definitely what helped me, even though I was, you know, cut multiple times.
Pierre Desir joining me for a couple of more moments. So it all paid off. Right back in March, you signed a 3-year contract. You have clearly established yourself with this team. So do you feel like now you have finally arrived in the league, or do you still approach it every single day like, I could get cut, I got to earn this job every day?
Yeah, I definitely approach it as any, you know, I have to be on my P's and Q's that I have to fight, because you never know. And I never relaxed even with having a contract. And I know that comes with even a bigger responsibility. And just have to keep that same, you know, chip on my shoulder from being a D2 athlete, being cut multiple times, and just keeping that attitude every day.
So final thought, you knew that if and when you made it, that if you were in a position to give back, you were going to give back. And because of all your hard work, that dream is now reality. As an example, you gave money to your high school, Francis Howell, for a new fitness center. They recently had you back for a ribbon cutting, and the students there were chanting your name. What was that moment like, and what does it feel like and mean to you to be able to give back now?
It was a special moment to be able to see all those kids, teachers, just everyone out there in support. My high school is definitely a big part of my life, and I definitely wanted to give back to them to show my appreciation for everything that I've learned, you know, in life. And I use those same methods that I was taught in high school in my current, you know, right now. So just wanted to give back and show them my appreciation, and that I care about them, that I'm always be there for them and try to help them any way I can.
He had an interception in Sunday's big win over Houston. The Colts are 4-2. They're first place in the AFC South, and they're at home against Denver on Sunday. Hey, Pierre, maybe you and I don't go 5 years before our next conversation. Good to have you back.
Right.
Let's do it sooner.
I appreciate it, man. Have me back on next time.
You too. Thanks, Pierre. Appreciate it. Pierre Desir, great story. So he had come on in 2014 and has had quite a journey. Ends up in Indianapolis, 3-year contract, making plays, and a very well-respected member of that defense. And they are in first in the AFC South, at home against Denver, Sunday, CBS, 1 p.m. 1-800-636-8686. It is toll-free, and we are now open until the top of hour number two. Hit me up. I want to talk more about Game 1. Juan Soto is a superstar. Did you know that dude's only 20? Did you know Jerome Bettis is from Detroit? Luckily, Soto is going to turn 21 soon. And the Colts are really impressive. When we come back, more on Game 1. Can't wait to get into the Lakers and Clippers. You know, what I thought about last night's matchup. And plenty more where that comes or where that came from. Therese Paylor in hour number two. Right now, here is a sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. Halfway through hour number one. I want to talk more about Game 1 of the World Series. Nats come out on top. They rip the home field. And now I'm not going to say that Houston is in a must-win situation, but they've got their backs to the wall already, especially the way the Nats are playing and the way they're winning. I'm not going to say the Nats could win 4 games using their rotation and their bullpen the way they did last night, but it was all about winning the first game. They did what they had to do. It was smart, and they got it done. You can't win 4 games doing that, but you can't win the first game. That was big. I mean, not only did they steal a game, but they stole a game from Gerrit Cole. They stole a game that Gerrit Cole was pitching, and they ripped the home field in the process. So, they went all in to win that game. And when Scherzer got tired, Patrick Corbin, a starter, came out of the bullpen. And he was probably going to be their Game 3 starter. So that might change up the rotation down the road. But again, it doesn't matter. Who cares about Game 3 or Game 4 when you've got a chance to rip Game 1? And then after Corbin, Martinez went to Tanner Rainey, then Daniel Hudson, then Sean Doolittle. So again, not pretty and not a recipe for winning 4 games. And Houston did have a look now. Houston had a really good look, in fact. But the Nats did just enough to win, just as they've done for several months now. And if you didn't know before what these dudes were about, you do now. Scherzer pitched his ass off. Soto played his ass off. Davey Martinez managed his ass off. And as Martinez says, the goal is always to go 1-0. They went 1-0 last night. That is the epitome of working ahead. I guarantee they already had Houston's attention going to last night's game. Now they've got everybody's attention. Tremendous heart, tremendous grit, a bunch of dogs playing checkers. And one 20-year-old budding superstar who is not only not afraid of the moment, but lives for the moment, and has got future Hall of Famer written all over this guy. This is exactly why I said yesterday that the Astros are favored. They should be favored. I'm riding with them, and I'm still riding with them. But everybody who had them as heavy favorites, who thought they were going to win this thing in a walkover, had no idea what they were talking about or had not seen the Nationals and what they've been doing for the last several months. Because if you didn't know before, you do now. These guys are no joke. And the Astros might, in fact, be in a must-win situation already. And that was a prize fight that turned into a street fight. Run it back. Roll it back. Verlander and Strasburg. In a few hours, October baseball is the best. Astros fan, are you sweating this? Are you nervous? How do you feel now after what happened last night? Home field's gone, and they got to Gerrit Cole. 1-800-636-8686. Before I talk about the Clippers, let's get a phone call in here. Jason, Harrisburg. Jason, how are you?
I'm good, Rami. How are you?
Good. Great.
Hey, Jeff in Southfield. I'd love to watch you meet David Goggins face-to-face, look him in the eye, and tell him that self-publishing isn't an accomplishment, but an admission of defeat. You must have missed Podcast 100, because not only did Goggins self-publish his book, it's number 5 on Amazon this week. And you going in on homeless losers and Rome Show sycophants is pretty funny, because your biggest claim to fame is wearing out a bunch of VHS tapes of Happy Days. I think the elbow on the jukebox trick is a lot cooler than you having a $10 a month Planet Fitness membership just so you have a place to take a shower, because where the Fonz may never have taken Pinky Tuscadero back to the spare bedroom at the Cunningham's house, I'm guessing there's some pretty long cold spells in that one-bedroom, half-bath apartment you call home. I bet when you hit day 150 without getting into a wrestling match, you go for a run in flip-flops just to remember what it sounds like. Just saying.
Jason in Harrisburg. I don't know, Jay. Given that Jeff in Southfield now spends his time ruining clones, like that's his new brand now, do you really want that? I mean, maybe that's why you called. Maybe you do want that. He was referring to Jeff in Southfield, who called yesterday, and he went in on Ira Craig. And one of the reasons he went in on Ira Craig is because he, quote, self-published and said, are you going to tell Goggins that? No, probably not. But I'm not sure it's one and the same. In case you missed it, this is part of what Jeff in Southfield did yesterday.
What Ira doesn't realize is that the manuscript titled When Every Day is Friday Night has been written and submitted by every wannabe rock star who's ever worked more than 12 months at Guitar Center. The difference between those dudes and Ira is the dudes from Guitar Center's dream is to be rock stars, while Ira's dream is to work at Guitar Center. Hey, Ira, here's what those publishing houses tell all those Guitar Center dudes. Yeah, every day of your life might be Friday night, but when your Friday nights are nothing but strippers and fat chicks, you're not interesting. In fact, there's a running joke amongst publishing house workers that they're all going to write a book titled When Every Day is Reading, yet another lame version of When Every Day is Friday Night. On the plus side...
Let me jump in there, Alvin. I don't know about you, but I like that guy. He is funny. Jason Harrisburg told Adam Hawk, Jeff in Southfield's an idiot. If by idiot you mean one of the best callers on the show right now, I agree. He's an idiot.
Just saying.
Guitar Center and Planet Fitness taking some on the program. Why? They didn't do anything to anybody. Just sitting around minding their own business, throwing their doors open, getting all purple with it, letting guys throw the weights around, selling a few guitars. What the hell did they ever do to anybody? Having pizza parties in a gym where people were trying to lose weight? Just saying. 1-800-636-8686. Astros fans, do the Nats have your attention now? They should. Man, they are nasty. They are tough. Really tough. As Hawk would say, in market, on topic. Welcome to the jungle. Let's go to Houston, Jerome. Why? Because he's in market and he's on topic. Hey, Hawk, you got any other radio phrases you want to throw around? Pick that up. Pick that up, Hawk. In market, on topic. Before I go to Jerome, in addition to being in market and on topic, is he anything else that I need to know?
Yes, he's a P1, which is people that listen to the show a lot. They spend a lot of TSL, time spent listening. He is a host dream for ratings. He helps us hit our quarter hour. So we love Jerome. He's
wow,
a P1
dude,
with a lot of TSL.
You are a radio dork, man. You are something else. All right, thanks for nothing. Let's go to Houston, Jerome. Hey, Jerome, you probably didn't know you were all those things. Welcome to the jungle. What's up?
Hey, Rome. Thanks for the vine. Warhawk for his nice comments, whether they're deserved or not. Anyway, I called a week and a half ago, maybe, and stated that the Nationals scared the hell out of me. And if you watched last night, which I did, which I'm suffering, or today at work, that's why they are. They remind me a lot of the Astros 2 years ago. No one knew much about them, but they were nasty in the rotation, nasty in the lineup, and these guys just have no quit in them. So I'm telling you what, I still think the Astros are going to get it done. I think that Verlander tonight is going to get it done. I will say that if it doesn't happen, then we're in this might be that must-win situation. So, anyway, we're pumped. I'm kind of drowning my sorrows with a little of that Tennessee sour mash, you know what I mean, down here in H-Town. That old Jack Daniels, we don't do that rum chata like that guy called 2 years ago. We don't know what that is. But anyway, the real workers down here, we on that Tennessee sour mash. We're enjoying it. Looking forward to tonight. Go Astros. Love your show, Rome. You're the best. I'm out.
My dude, Jerome in Houston. In market, on topic. Rack him. Well done, Jerome. He made the point. These guys scare the hell out of me. And they scared the hell out of me a couple of weeks back. And now that I've seen firsthand what they can do, and they did it to our guys in our house, now I'm really scared. Listen, I'm not panicking. I'm still riding with the Astros. Best team in baseball. And I didn't see anything last night that I didn't expect. I'm going to still ride with these guys, but I'm going to say that this is, if not a must-win game tonight, the closest thing to a must-win game. Because the way the Nats are rolling right now, and again, they got deeper into their bullpen than they wanted to. Hey, and by the way, where are those arsonists? There were some sketchy moments last night, but that bullpen has held together somehow, some way. I would say tonight is not a must-win, but it is the closest thing to a must-win. Because then all of a sudden, you've got to go back on the road, and you've got to beat these guys four times in five games. And considering the rotation they can run out there, and as clutch as they are, and as tough as they are, that's a big, big ask. Astro fan, how concerned are you? Again, these are the Nats. And we saw the way they played in the last half of the season. We saw them trailing the Brewers in the wild card game and they came back. We saw what they did to the Dodgers. We saw them go right through the Cardinals. This is who these guys are. That's a dangerous, dangerous team that is really comfortable when things are uncomfortable. Really comfortable on the big stage. Now, the Astros had their opportunities. They just did not cash them in. They had guys in scoring position. They had opportunities, they just couldn't finish. And it looked like they were going to finish early on, too, and didn't. The Nats never blink, they never back up. 1-800-636-8686. And you can't say enough things. Even though the entire world is now jocking Juan Soto, you can't say enough about this guy. For him to make the in-game adjustments he made, for him to be just 20, for him to play that well on that big of a stage, for him to be that hungry to be on that big of a stage. It's like the guy just loves it. It's one thing to live for the moment, but this kid is so comfortable on that big stage. He loves it and is not afraid and technically, mechanically, makes unbelievable adjustments. That is a phenom. 1-800-636-8686. Let's go this time to Ontario. Banging telephone calls in hour one. It feels good. Reggie in Ontario. Hey, Reggie, how are you?
Rome, I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm great, Reggie. What do you want to talk about? What's up?
I'm just calling in. I'm not in Ontario, California. I'm in Ontario, Canada.
Awesome.
Just calling in, listening to you on 90.5 Extra Sports FM.
All right, so thanks, Reggie. Next time you call. Next time you call, Reggie, and I say, Reggie in Ontario, I don't need clarification of what Ontario. And, you know, I'm all about you mentioning the station that you're listening on. That's great. I'm nothing without stations that carry the program. I couldn't appreciate them more for carrying the program. However, you got to get to your point, yo. We've got a show to do here. So,
yo,
when I address you by name and I say what town you are calling from, man, just go. Let it rip. What the hell you want to talk about? Even if it takes you a moment to settle in, I'm here for that. That's fine. But if I have to reset it three times, you're gone. Reggie, that was really awkward. Really awkward and really bad radio. This is not as hard as you're making it. What do you want to talk about? If I didn't cut you off, we'd still be doing that dance right now. Hey, Rome. Hey, Reggie. Hey, Reggie. Hey, Rome. Yeah, Reggie in Ontario, what's up? All right, let me stop you right there, Rome. I'm in Ontario, Canada, not Ontario, California. Right, Reggie? I knew that. And at the same time, I didn't ask for any clarification either. I didn't need to know which Ontario. One, I knew. Two, I really didn't care. Okay, Rome. I'm also listening on this FM station. Great. Reggie, what the hell you want to talk about? All right, you had to go through it, I guess. Next time you call, Reg, just get right to your call. How you doing, Rome? Great. Good. Listen, about the Astros, it's pretty easy. Or not nearly as hard as you're making it. Hey, Rome, it's Reggie. Yeah, I know, Reggie. It's Reggie in Ontario, Rome. I know. Rome, it's Reggie in Ontario, and right now it's 56 degrees, and there are four clouds in the sky. Great. Thank you, Reggie. Hey, Rome, you know what I had for breakfast? No, Reggie, tell me. What did you have for breakfast? I had eggs. Great. What did you have, Rome? Same. Reggie, how long are we going to keep this up? This is why we don't take a lot of telephone calls. I mean, there are a lot of people who call. We just don't take a lot of the calls. And if that's the kind of call that we do take, you can only imagine what we turn away. All right, clones, there's your refresher course. This is how this is going to go. You're going to call me. You're going to talk to Adam Hawk first. Hawk is going to be happy to talk to you. He's going to say, what do you want to talk about? You're going to tell him. He's going to say, great, that works. Or he's going to say, you know what, that doesn't work. If it does work, he will put you on hold. Then you wait on hold. Then you wait on hold until it's your turn. And then I put you up. And then we have a brief exchange where we acknowledge each other. And then you give me your freaking take. Just get into it. Just get into it. Like, I don't know you. I don't know your family. I'm not going to ask you how the kids are. I don't know if you have kids. At Wells in the 360 tweets, a bad call from Canada. Who would have ever expected that? Signed, Smackoff 25. Listen, the bros didn't show up the way that they hoped or that I hoped on that day. But on their worst day, that would never happen to either Matt or Tyler from Shredminton. Therese Paler joins me when we come back. And we can try again with the phone calls after that. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome, and I want to talk Clippers-Lakers next hour, too.